Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to have an in-depth discussion of chlorophyllin. It protects against all forms of environmental toxins. Because every 24 hours, we are consuming in the air and the food, even if you're eating right, toxins that can mutate our DNA. So an interesting piece of research by Dr. Edward R. Rosnick explains why this one single nutrient is so important. Also, I'm asked all the time, people who might have heard a program and said, you mentioned something about aging, but I wasn't paying attention or I didn't write it down. Okay, today, a more in-depth discussion on stop accelerated aging. Now, we cannot stop aging per se. What we can do is we can repair a lot of the damage that's been done to our brains, our eyes, our heart, our lungs, our musculature, our joints, our endothelium, and we can rebuild the immune system in the process. I'll talk about that. A very important piece from Stephen Jacobs on that. Also today, I'm going to give the latest on how the corporate courts have taken from the poor and handed to the rich. You've heard of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's been signed. Right behind it is the TTIP. This will turbocharge redistribution of wealth. I'll give you the latest on that and why we should be opposed to both. Air pollution, it's serious. It's killing millions of people and threatening global health systems. That'll be from our environmental segment. Also, for the first time, a study has been able to prove through the University of California at Santa Cruz that the link between oil and gas activity in California is causing earthquakes. As reported by Associated Press, I'll share that with you. That should be of great concern to people in California. Why? Because on the one hand, you don't want to live near a place that could end up with an earthquake because the government of the state, or at least individuals within that government overseeing your protection, have leaned more in the direction of the gas and oil interests than they have your protection. So you're at risk of earthquakes. Now, maybe not the big one. That's not what we're referring to. And that's overdue. But smaller ones. And if you want an example of how bad it could be, Oklahoma this year had more earthquakes than all the other places in North and South America and Canada combined. Not good at all. Also today, I'll have a guest following my health and nutrition segment, and she is going to talk about something as a part of a new series. What I intend to do is go into the local communities. Now, mind you, we're heard worldwide, but at least to the core audience in the greater tri-state area, and then wherever possible, I'll create a list of healthcare practitioners around the world. We're accumulating now the best Ayurvedic medicine specialists, Chinese medicine specialists for China, for Korea, for Japan, for Indonesia, and for India, and Native American healing, African bush healing, South American shaman healing. I'm actually trying to create a list of those that are at least as credible and legitimate as possible, so you know of all the alternatives, plus the orthodox medical model that has broadened itself, meaning, let's say, a French or English or German physician, Italian, a Spanish physician, who has sought to broaden the perspective beyond the strictly orthodox approach. And I'll tell you who these people are and what their specialties are, and then you can reach out from them. And even with each one, I'll give you a series of questions you should ask before going in to see anyone so that you minimize the downside if they're not the right person for you. Today, I'm beginning this series with a woman named June Kiefer. She's a nurse practitioner, which is like a physician, but she specializes in psychiatric mental health care. And that's where she holds her degrees, and that's where she has a 20-some-year practice. Why? Because I'm faced all the time with people who say, Gary, I've got depression, I've got anxiety, my kid's diagnosed with ADD, I got separation anxiety, I don't know what to do, or I'm on the meds and I don't know how to get off of them, and they're causing terrible side effects. So a natural, holistic approach to mental health, and we'll talk about that. And that will be preceded by the next clip in the ongoing original investigative reporting series on the abuses in psychiatry. Again, the full documentary, which is brand new, called Manufacturing Madness, which I've been working on for over 3.5 years, will premiere later this year. This is just one single clip from a very important film you'll be brought up to date on. And this one is entitled Making a Killing, The Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugging. And then I'm going to also, if time permits today, I want to respond to those who want our government to be Christian. This is a speech that you'll find interesting. It's short, but very rewarding. And also, I said I'd be getting a series of outstanding speakers on the subject of safety and efficacy of vaccines. This is a classroom on the air. It is not necessarily compelling from a dramatic point of view. It's not meant to be. It's meant for those of you who are questioning the safety and efficacy of a vaccine or possibly the injury you or someone you know have sustained, and you want to know, is there a connection? My first guest is a Dr. Tatiana Obenhunch, and she is a doctorate in immunology. And she's speaking on immunology because that's where you have to start. Is vaccination the same as immunization? She'll explain that. And she'll explain it in a 10-part series, but I have over 20 guests. Each have between 5 and 10 parts. We're talking about taking a full year, because I'm not going to do it every day, to give you different experts who spend thousands of hours, who are more knowledgeable than anyone else in the pro-vaccine side, and who you never hear of, because if they were ever in a debate, they would win the debate hands down, because they're there to tell the truth. They've all published in peer-reviewed literature. She also is a professor. So again, it's a little on the dry side, not the easiest to listen to. Please be patient. I'm only going to play 10 minutes. But in that 10 minutes, you begin to see, wow, I didn't know this. I didn't know that a baby doesn't even have the capacity for certain antibodies. I didn't know that vaccines only impact one part of the immune system and not the full immune system. You're going to learn, please take notes, and the full clip, all of the information, you can download from my Facebook, and that'll help you as well. So we have a lot to share. And as always, I always remind people that if for any reason that you try to listen in and you can't, maybe I've been preempted, maybe you're not able to get me from a land-based station, you can always listen over the telephone. Please write down this number, 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. Now, let's go to the issues at hand. We live in a very toxic environment. Even those of us who have air purifiers in our home or have water purifiers because we don't trust what comes out of the tap, and for good reason. We now know that medicines come out of the tap in what are called micro amounts. And these are tiny amounts you can't see with the naked eye. But we also know that they can be biologically active at parts per billion. Now, historically, anything in a part per billion was considered safe, too small. The idea was you get rid of pollution by dilution. Well, that doesn't work. You simply spread whatever is polluting out over a larger area. For example, if I took one part per billion of ethyl or methyl mercury, one drop from an eyedropper, into an Olympic swimming pool, the entire pool is contaminated. That is why you should never listen to government officials who say, oh, you know, so you've got some DDD or DDT, or you have heptachlor, you have chlordane, you have all these chemicals in your body. Not to worry, it's under our standard amount allowable. Same with radiation. When you understand the politics of the special interest groups, they're able to go in there and affect these standards. So you just want to make sure that everything you consume, drinking, breathing, or eating, is as clean as possible. But then you realize, gee whiz, if you were like me, you're lucky to be alive. Why? Because everyone in my home, except me, smoked. And my mother was considered a light smoker in our home. She only smoked 3 packs a day. My father smoked 5. My older brother smoked 4. All my aunts and uncles smoked. Everything smelled like cigarette smoke. Now we know, all these years later, that secondhand smoke is extremely deadly. So you could only imagine the damage that's been done to the DNA, the lungs, and the heart without even trying. So that's why we cannot be frivolous or indifferent to contaminants. So what can we do about it? All right, there are several things we can do to help repair the damage done to our DNA by chemicals. And one of those, and I'm going to make it simple. I'm going to give you one. It's called chlorophyllin. Chlora, C-H-L-O-R-O, phyllin, P-H-Y-L-L-I-N. It has enormous capacity to grab onto and neutralize the toxins that are in our diet and in our environment. Remember all those environmental toxins? And by the way, for all the Gulf War vets in this audience, including Doug Rocky, who was the head of the Pentagon's program to see whether or not depleted uranium was dangerous, when he came back with a report saying it was extraordinarily dangerous, they did nothing but try to bury his report. It is estimated that more than 300,000 vets minimally died from Gulf War syndrome-related conditions. The government covered it up. Well, today I just sent to my attorneys to review the latest article I've written, which will be in 2 parts. It'll be done later this week, posted on my website, Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own, Part 1 and Part 2, fully documented, including listing the documents that are now declassified or obtained under Freedom of Information, showing that the vets, when they came home from the 1991 conflict in the Middle East, in Iraq, yeah, they had real conditions. Why? The environmental toxins. And I list what each one of those environmental toxins do to the body. And so they weren't making it up. In fact, some of them had that from the vaccines, like the squalene adjuvant with the botulism in also the anthrax vaccines. So what do we do? Well, we're faced with 80,000 new chemicals added to our environment in the last 70 years. To give you an idea, that's over 4 billion pounds of these chemicals. Most are known carcinogens, and they can impact our DNA in a lot of different ways. And yet the EPA and the FDA have done virtually nothing substantial. And by the way, keep an eye on the one of the anti-mosquito herbicides that are being used down in South America, because that is the most plausible explanation for why that particular virus is now impacting pregnant women. For 70 years, it didn't impact any infants. Now it is. More on that on an upcoming program. So the question is, we're all polluted. All right, so then what will help? Well, we know garlic helps. We know onions help. Those are both good. We know the vitamin C is a natural chelator, especially if you take it about 6 times a day, up to bowel tolerance. That's good. Best to take it from some kind of liquid, like a little protein shake. Maybe take it with 3 ounces of protein, so it's more buffered, so you don't end up with upset stomach or irritable bowel. So you get more of it into your system. If you really want to detox heavy duty, you do intravenous vitamin C, because then you're getting a lot of vitamin C and you don't have to worry about diarrhea, and massive amounts of chemicals come out of your body. How do we know? Well, because after helping create protocols for more than 3,000 individuals at the Tri-State Healing Center, with all the physicians and scientists working there, we measured the blood, measured the urine for chemicals, and you see the amount that comes out after chelation therapy or after vitamin C drips. But for most people, they want something simple, inexpensive. Then the best I could suggest would be chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is the green part of plants. It can also be other colors as well. It is a known anti-carcinogenic. It is a known detoxifier, and it targets a number of molecules and pathways involving cancer development, and it helps protect against mutagens of the P53 tumor suppressor gene. And it disables potent carcinogens such as polycystic aromatic hydrocarbons and heterocyclic amines. So, if you had, let me put this in real lay language. Let's say that you got a relative who's not going to give up their bad habits. But you love them, you care about them, and you want them to do something, even one thing. Well, let's say they had the hamburger, the hot dog. That's got heterocyclic amines that's formed when they heat the meat. Okay, and that can really inflict malignant changes. If they took chlorophyll, chlorophyll right after that, what chlorophyll does, it disables potent carcinogens and it binds to a number of other common carcinogens, including the dibenza group, and limits their ability to form DNA adducts, which are strands of DNA bonded to cancer-causing toxins. And the formation of the DNA adducts is an early step in the formation of cancer-causing DNA mutations. Well, chlorophyll limits the DNA adduct formation caused by a variety of known carcinogens. It functions as an anti-mutagenic agent against a number of prevalent chemicals in the environment, some of the most common ones. And that can protect your colon, your prostate, your pancreas, and breast. It's great. Also, as the overall, it can help with oral cancer, bladder cancers, and it detoxifies. It's safe. It's inexpensive. It's all natural. And it can bind and remove toxins from the body, including aflatoxin, which is not easy to do, but it does it. Generally, in the 100 milligram range, and it can help get rid of lead and mercury also. And there's a lot of good science behind it. Now, also, there's more and more science showing how we can slow down and reverse much of the aging process. How do we do that? Well, a major factor underlying accelerated aging is a phenomenon known as immune senescence. This is caused by how many toxins we put in the body, how much stress we're under, how much oxidative stress we're under. Now, here's the irony. Listen carefully. You could be trying to do something good for yourself, like exercise, but exercise in and of itself creates oxidative stress. Yes, you're helping your muscles. That's good. You're lowering your pulse rate, lengthening the lifespan of your heart. That's great. You are creating stress-reducing hormones, the endorphins, so you feel better for about 6 hours. That's terrific. And you're also bringing down your blood pressure. Good. You're evening out your blood sugar, especially if you're pre or diabetic. Terrific. All that's good. The negative side, you've increased free radicals. And especially those who do long-distance training. That means that the longer you train and race, no matter what the sport, the more of these free radicals you create. And, you know, it was interesting because a buddy of mine, who was the treasurer for the New York Running Club from the beginning, from its foundation, Peter Roth, and Peter was an outstanding athlete, winning a lot of runs, and he and I used to train and race together. In fact, we ran the Montreal Marathon together. And he co-founded the Natural Living Running and Walking Club 35 years ago. And we've trained over 28,000 athletes to do the New York City Marathon and other races. So he is very knowledgeable. But I said to him, have you noticed how old a lot of the elite runners look, especially the marathoners. And he said, yeah. And I said, there must be something that's happening in their body that's prematurely aging. At that time, it was all theoretical and we didn't know. Now we know that if you're not compensating by taking in antioxidants like vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, tocotrienols, then if you do, you help trap those free radicals, so then you get almost all positive. But if you don't, you prematurely age the muscle, you prematurely age the mitochondria, so you'll do great for 5, even 10 years, and then you're burned out. And then you're prematurely aged. I mean, look at Greta White's. Look at some of these great athletes, some of the greatest athletes on the planet, and very nice people. And look at them today, and some have died. So just understand that we can overdo something. So what is the ideal? Well, the ideal is about 3 miles of training a day, 6 days a week, to get your body up to an ideal physical health level. Now, that may not get you in race shape, but it will get you to where you're benefiting and can slow down the aging process. And the immune system begins to decline at about age 25, and it just keeps declining. And when the immune system declines, you're more susceptible to cancers and infections and what we call hyperinflammation. That destroys your neurons, which can affect your brain, endothelium, which affects your heart circulation, and your joints. So what we have to do is say, what can we do to slow all this down? What can we do to reverse the damage? There's a lot we can do. There are 3 specific natural compounds that have been each shown to reverse a broad spectrum of harmful changes that occur in the immune system with advancing age. Over the age of 40 is advancing. One is a tea, puera, P-U-E-R-A. And the other is the reishi mushroom, and then the sustanchi. So these 3 make a big difference. And remember, your immune system, a lot of it's made in your bone marrow. So if you enhance bone marrow production, you enhance immune system cells. And then you want to get circulating immune cells, and you want to upgrade your ability to deal with the loss of the overproduction of the inflammatory and anti-inflammatory cytokines that maintain a safe and natural balance, and that will work. Something simple, something easy, not that difficult. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. We have a lot more to share with you. Oh, by the way, just so you know how to spell these, P-U-E-R-A, that's easy. And it's green and white teas are made from dried but unfermented leaves of the Camellia senescensis, the tea plant. Oolong tea is partially fermented, and black tea is fully fermented, but then used without further post-fermentation activity. The puera tea is different from those others because it is post-fermented or ripened tea. It's allowed to undergo a natural microbial fermentation process under controlled condition, and that enhances its bioactive molecules substantially. And the extracts of the tea are rich in polyphenols and other bioactive molecules that develop during the unique post-fermentation process, including a unique group of phenolic compounds known as the theobromins, and that's good. Whereas the green tea and black teas, which are very good, are good for you, but they can't compare to the polyphenol gallic acid, G-A-L-L-I-C, that is produced in the fermentation process. It's extremely good. And also, to enhance your healthy immune response while suppressing inflammation, you want the special strain of what is called C-I-S-T-A-N-C-H-E. It's really good for turning off inflammation anywhere in the body and impacting the memory T cells. And of course, shiitake. You're all familiar with shiitake and maitake mushrooms. of the reishi mushroom, however, is even more powerful, R-E-I-S-H-I. And it's even been able to block the infection of herpes simplex and herpes zoster that is responsible for the painful shingles. And they accomplish this by activating natural killer cells and stimulating their proliferation and triggering them to label and destroy cells infected with the virus, and by directing binding to the viruses, preventing them from attaching to and penetrating healthy body cells prior to setting up an infection. So it's really good. So you can help yourself prevent influenza virus, Epstein-Barr virus, hepatitis B virus. Yeah, reishi mushroom extracts are effective against the dangerous hepatitis B, which is a major cause of liver disease worldwide. So you're dealing with simple things, inexpensive things, easy to find things that can make a big difference. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Like to welcome all of you. Just two elements from our environmental series. From the University of California, San Diego, published in Environmental News Network, a study finds toxic pollutants in fish across the world's ocean. Everywhere. A new global analysis of seafood found that fish populations throughout the entire world's oceans are contaminated with industrial and agricultural pollutants, collectively known as persistent organic pollutants, or POPs. The study was done at Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the University of California, San Diego, and it uncovered some concentrations that have been around. Now, in some places, it's dropping, but not everywhere, so they're finding DDT and mercury, as well as newer industrial chemicals, even flame retardants and coolants in the fish. And in some cases, they're increasing by 1,000-fold. Quote, this means that the typical fish that you consume today can have approximately 50% of the concentration of most of the POPs when compared to the same fish eaten by your parents at your age. So it means that all the fish are polluted. So just please keep that in mind. And also, from the Associated Press, San Francisco, a spate of earthquakes in California's Central Valley almost certainly was triggered by oil-filled injection underground. A study published said in the first such link in California between oil and gas operations earthquakes. Researchers at University of California, Santa Cruz, University of Southern California, and two French universities published their findings in a publication of the American Geophysical Union. The research links a local surge in injection by oil companies of waste water underground with an unusual jump in seismic activity in and around the Tijon oil field in southern Kern County. Well, it's all over the place. So what's the answer? The answer is simple. Every state should stop all gas hydrofracking and no new oil, wells be allowed. It's that simple. Now, we're going, before we go to our guest, who is the first guest in a new series of trying to find people who have real holistic practices that can help us with some of our major conditions. And I'll be having different people on a weekly basis. This is June Kiefer. She has a master's in psychiatric mental health nursing from Stony Brook. She's been in active full-time practice since 1996. She's board certified by the ANCC and has been a nurse practitioner since 1993. She also holds an adjunct position as clinical assistant professor with the School of Nursing at Stony Brook. And she will be with us in a moment. But first, why should we be interested? Why should we care? Well, because there's an awful lot of fraud in the field of psychiatry and mental health. Let's listen to a clip, a short clip, but nonetheless important in the ongoing series. This is Making a Killing, the Untold Story of Psychotropic Drugging.
Are targeted and gifted extensively by the industry. Now that gifting is where you need to get specific.
That was not unusual during our marketing conversations to say, well, what's our top drug writer? You know, who's the doctor that's prescribing the most of this drug? Well, you know, let's send them to the Kentucky Derby.
We offered trips on some occasions to come out and hear a two-hour talk, but it happened to be on a nice island in Hawaii.
There were a lot of things that we did day in and day out to try to get the doctors to write our drugs, or in my case, to write for the psychiatric drugs. We did a lot of lunches and dinners, and we brought in speakers, and those speakers were obviously paid by us, and we would wave, renowned studies at them from renowned journals. But of course, we would never say that these studies were paid for by our company, and that it was written by a ghostwriter who was paid by our company, or that our company tends to do a ton of advertising within that particular medical journal. We would never say that.
With over 300 million psychiatric drug prescriptions written every year, high prescribing psychiatrists are richly rewarded for opening up new markets. They receive up to 25% more pharmaceutical money than any other medical specialty. An average in one state of more than $45,000 per top psychiatrist per year.
Psychiatrists get more kickback from the pharmaceutical companies than any other branch of medicine.
The profession of psychiatry couldn't keep its journals afloat, couldn't keep its conferences afloat, couldn't keep its organizations afloat without money from drug companies. The drug companies really have psychiatry in their pocket.
This is a profession whose diagnoses have been heavily influenced by people who are heavily influenced by the pharmaceutical industry, and whose treatments are almost exclusively these days pharmaceuticals. We should be able to count on them. I do not believe that we can.
Due to the ceaseless promotion by psychiatrists, psychotropic drug prescription has permeated not just psychiatry, but the entire medical profession. But this promotional campaign has a second prong that lines the pockets of psychiatrists more than any other. And this one directly targets you.
Abilify helps control symptoms of bipolar mania.
Ask your doctor about Effexor XR.
Paxil, the most prescribed medication of its kind.
Prozac Weekly is here.
Zoloft, a prescription.
Seraphim.
PMDD.
Psychiatrists and drug companies don't hype psychiatric drugs only to fellow prescribers. They also pitch them straight to the end user. You. Counting on you to walk into their offices and demand a prescription.
The direct-to-consumer advertising is instilling the notion in every human being that something is mentally wrong, something needs correction. That drives people to see a psychiatrist to help to mitigate this by dispensing the medication, by dispensing a drug that they have had pushed on them on countless television ads, countless magazine ads, and countless print ads that say, hey, there's something wrong with you. Go get help for it.
Nowhere is this explosion of direct-to-consumer advertising more obvious than on television. It wasn't always this way. Until recently, advertising psychiatric drugs on TV was severely restricted. But in 1997, the FDA was persuaded to relax their rules on advertising in the media, in direct violation of Article 10 of an international treaty signed at the United Nations.
Every 5 minutes, there's a new drug ad. And this is not by accident. This is cold, canny, scientific design.
The ads are fundamentally of two types. One type of ad is a effort to try to get the patient to take the drug company's drug.
Abilify helps control symptoms of bipolar mania.
But then the second kind of direct-to-consumer advertising is the you're sick and you didn't know it advertising.
You could be suffering from generalized anxiety disorder.
Because they want to create sales. So what they're going to do is tell people, do you have these symptoms? Do you have this disease? Do you have this particular condition?
But they hit it so hard on television that people say, ask your doctor, ask your doctor. Every commercial is a referral to the doctor. See, they're working for each other.
Ask your doctor about Cymbalta. Depression hurts. Cymbalta can help.
I can go to my doctor and say, here are my symptoms, and walk out with the prescription I want. I can ask for a drug by name, and most of the time, I'll be given the drug. So basically, I'm my own doctor.
The industry defends what it's doing by saying this is some kind of public health education campaign. And I'm sorry, I think if you go to an advertising agency, you're advertising.
From the start, advertising psychiatric drugs on television has been phenomenally successful. In just the first 3 years, sales of psychiatric drugs skyrocketed by 250%. With grosses now hitting record levels, the drug industry is spending $2.9 billion a year in TV advertising alone. And once this drives people into the offices of psychiatrists, they can be hooked using another marketing ploy, free samples.
The industry is willing to give out millions of dollars worth of free samples because it generates billions of dollars in sales.
You want a prescription and you want Prozac written forever as a maintenance therapy. So you establish that with some free Prozac up front.
Here, take this sample. It doesn't cost you anything. And then if you like it or if it seems to work, then we'll make a prescription. But you're going to have to pay for that prescription. The sample is free. So it's really a marketing technique.
They got a cash cow. Zero refill means you've got to go back to the doctor for another consultation, for another subscription, and it just goes forever. This is business. This is money.
Some direct-to-consumer marketing is camouflaged as public information. Psychiatrists regularly appear in the media, warning the public of the latest mental illness epidemics and hawking their latest breakthroughs. They write articles planted in newspapers and magazines that further their mental health awareness campaigns. Even patient advocacy groups claiming to offer unbiased information on psychiatric drugs are, upon closer inspection, pharmaceutically funded front groups managed by psychiatrists.
They were started specifically by the industry themselves, and the public isn't informed of that. You know, it's basically a great big lie to the public that they think they're going to a charitable organization that has their best interest at heart.
Case in point, children and adults with attention deficit disorder, or CHAD, the biggest and most well-funded front group for the makers of stimulant drugs. Stephen Plogg is a former CHAD executive.
When I became the CHAD coordinator for Las Vegas, they gave me a manual, and in it it said, we want to provide unbiased information to help and support people who have ADD. For the next 30 days, we put 22 parents and their kids on a program with lab tests to find out what their causes were, eliminated their causes, they got prescription-free, medication-free, side-effect-free, and they got better with their self-esteem, and they became actually happier, healthier, and more successful. Chad found out about this, called me up and says, we do not allow people to talk about nutrition in any of our seminars. We only prescribe going to a psychiatrist who will only prescribe drugs and therapy. So they said, you can no longer work with us, and they fired me for simply recommending that parents go get a lab test, find out what the causes are, and eliminate the causes. They do not allow that. They only allow medication and psychiatric treatment.
Psychiatric patient advocacy groups also promote psychotropic drug treatment by broadly issuing public marketing surveys disguised as medical questionnaires.
You can take a survey of maybe 16 questions. And if you are a normal human being who's lived through ranges of emotions of normal life experience, if you've known the exhilaration of the birth of a child, a niece, a nephew, and the devastation of a divorce and the loss of dreams, and answer honestly those questions, you will diagnose yourself as bipolar.
And that's just a little bit of the documentary. More on upcoming days. Now let's say hello to June Kiefer. Hi, June.
Hi, how are you?
Good, June. You just heard the comment there that so many people today are diagnosing themselves as having social anxiety disorder, or school teachers, even parents. Old Jimmy is looking out the window. Jimmy's fidgety. Jiminy isn't paying attention. Jimmy isn't studying. He must have ADD and ADHD. You deal with these kind of conditions. Tell us about what you find when you're dealing with people with depression, anxiety, and bipolar, or with ADD and ADHD. Let's just stick with those.
Okay, Gary. Well, first of all, thank you for putting this on the air. I find that the pharmaceutical company is attempting to dictate my practice, and I will not, no pun intended, prescribe to that mode of therapy. I find it unconscionable. Unfortunately, when I first started my practice, it was basically talk therapy, and that's what people would call up for. They had an issue, who doesn't have issues, and they wanted to come in, resolve, talk about it, and it works. It's highly effective. What I am finding over the last several years, ever since pharmaceutical companies have been advertising on television and the radio, I now have clients who are dictating my practice because they want the quick fix. They want the pill. They want the psychotropic medication that they hear about, they see about. Well, if it's on television, it must be true. It's not true. It's not true. I believe that there is a time and a place for conventional medicine, but psychotropic medication, no. No, there are opportunities that we have. We are all anxious, sad, depressed, feeling up and down, as some people would call bipolar. First of all, don't self-diagnose. Second of all, take things such as valerian root, kava kava, rescue remedy. They're wonderful, wonderful modes of therapy, modalities that are truly effective. Don't go for the quick fix.
June, give us an idea of how you would speak with someone who comes in saying that they're in a deep depression, they only see the negative in life, they have low self-esteem, they've given up, they've become apathetic, they let their diet go, they let their hygiene go, they let their home go, there's just clutter and dirt. Where do you begin and what do you do and what have been some of the outcomes that you're happy with and the patient's happy with?
Well, by validating, first of all, you have to go to what I call the point of origin. We've all been victimized in life. Nobody has gotten through childhood unscathed. So I go back to what I call, again, the point of origin. And by going back there, it releases the client by allowing them the opportunity to see that they don't have to continue playing and being the victim. It's so empowering right then and there. It gives us the opportunity to change our thinking. There's no such thing as reality. It's all perception. So as we change our perception based on what we tell ourselves, we therefore can profoundly change our reality. And by saying to ourselves, well, I'm sad in the morning. Well, then get out of your way. What you put into your body, what you put into your mind will have a direct impact into the outcome of your day. Then you build on that and you see how I see firsthand by allowing the client to go there. It's so empowering, and it gives them the opportunity to say, I can do this. I can do this. It exercises what I call the confidence muscle, and that is exactly what I build on, and it works. It truly works. I've seen clients come in one way and leave completely different.
June, have you been able to get people off psychiatric drugs?
Yes, but they white knuckle it. People don't want to hear about diet and exercise and getting those endorphins going. They want that quick fix. But if you're willing to do the work, you have to work through it. You don't get over it. You get over a cold. You have to work through issues. and it truly works. And absolutely, Gary, there are so many other ways, beneficial ways, comprehensive, holistic ways that people can do this. And once they do it, they'll never go back to the psychotropic medications again.
Have you found we have an overdiagnosed group of children in the United States with the overused, if not frequently fraudulently used, ADD and ADH labels?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's all, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theory, but it is. The pharmaceutical companies are in bed with the insurance companies, and I think are also in bed with the AMA. And these are people who are dictating the practice. So if my child is just staring out the window, they can no longer be daydreaming. We have to look at, oh, they might be out of focus. Oh, they're jittery. No, they're playing. Let's look at pet therapy. Let's look at play therapy. Let's not look at the medication that's simply going to mess around with those precious little chemicals in their little brains that can truly mar them for life.
Okay. So I'm glad to hear that you're helping people. I'm glad to hear that you're helping people with psychiatric and mental health disorders deal with life issues and don't take the pharmaceutical approach. And give the people your phone number, June.
Surely. Area code 631-981-8807.
Again, a little slower.
I'm sorry. 631-981-8807.
June, thank you very much, and we look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Thank you very much, Gary. Take care.
June Kiefer, K-I-E-F-E-R. And she is the first of what will be a whole group of people, herbalists, botanists, naturopaths, others coming on to talk about natural approaches to dealing with disease. Now, let's go to a segment. We're starting just after her introduction. I've already given you her background. This is a first part of a discussion from one of the leading academic immunologists in the world on the subject of vaccinations equal immunizations. And Dr. Tatiana has a different point of view.
Diseases were eradicated already, and you know, vaccination came and claimed the credit. But for measles, this is not the case, so we have to be careful. So this is figures are taken from the paper by Langmuir, American epidemiologist, and he published that in 1962. This is 1 year before measles vaccine was introduced in the United States in 63. So what he shows here is that the cases of measles, the measles incidence is pretty much stable. It fluctuates up and down. This is expected of epidemics. They come and go. But it's pretty much stable. There is no trend down. But in terms of deaths from measles, there is an obvious trend, right? And this is the years of 1912, 1959. So measles was there, but over the first half of the 20th century, it was getting less and less deadly, right? So something was changing. Now, in the 60s, the vaccine was introduced, but let's see who was mostly affected by death from measles, right? So here, on figure three, we have sort of three graphs here. Morbidity is just a term for illness. Mortality is death. So, and this is the age distribution. So we have from age 0 to 15 everywhere. So we see that the majority of measles illness was happening in children, right? And by the time they reach 15, pretty much everyone had their measles. And because of the immunity, no one really had measles second time. So there was no measles in the adulthood. That's why diseases like measles are called childhood diseases, right? But then the majority of deaths were happening really in very, very young kids, infants pretty much, you know, around the age one. And so if you calculate case fatality ratio, it's very much age dependent. And so you see that children maybe 3 years old or 2.5 and beyond, the measles mortality was only 1 in 10,000 according to this estimate. 1 in 10,000, I would say it's pretty rare, because just for comparison, at that time in the 40s, in the 50s, the rate of autism was 1 in 10,000, and no one heard about autism. So this is just for comparison purposes. But of course, in the younger age group, the mortality was much higher. And this is problematic, of course. We don't want to leave it that way. So, you know, measles virus was put on the list of eradication because, you know, it causes us problems, so we have to get rid of it, right? There was another way to deal with childhood mortality, and I will talk about it more at the end, but just to mention what it is, breastfeeding, and we will talk about why. But for now, let's concentrate on the eradication campaign and see what came out of it. So in 1963, measles vaccine is introduced in the United States, and I think in Canada as well. And here you see that in the next 5 years, the incidence of measles goes down dramatically. And with such a precipitous decline, one would think, well, it should be eliminated right there. But no, something is happening. After 5 years, the measles kind of stabilized, right? And although the levels are now tenfold less, here it was maybe 500,000 cases per year, and here is only 50,000 at the most, you know, at the peak of the epidemic. But these peaks just continue, right, with some periodicity. So then another vaccine is introduced, double dose, right, in 1989. In Canada, the double dose was introduced a little bit later in 1996. And then by the year 2000, measles was declared eradicated in the United States, and in Canada, the number is 2002. But we still have measles, right? We still hear that there are outbreaks of measles here and there. And the officials tell us that all of these outbreaks are imported outbreaks, that there is no more endemic measles, meaning native to the land. What was here, all the virus that was native to this land is eradicated. So therefore, we have to keep vaccinating because measles is still in some other countries and people travel and bring measles back. Therefore, we have to keep vaccinating. So we would think, okay, so if everyone or most of the children are vaccinated here, then what are these outbreaks, right? Are they occurring only in those who were left unvaccinated for some reason? Or what is going on? But actually, no. If you look at the papers, the medical literature, you will see that measles outbreaks involve not only unvaccinated, but also vaccinated children. And so I will just read the titles. Measles outbreak in a vaccinated school population. Major measles epidemic in the region of Quebec despite a 99% vaccine coverage. Outbreak of measles in a highly vaccinated secondary school population. And the last one, pretty recent, the largest measles epidemic in North America in a decade. So all of this is published in the journals of public health or epidemiology. And the interesting thing is that my field, the field of immunology, the basic field, the ones that sort of is responsible for all these theories of immunity, we don't really deal with the real world. We do research in labs. We are sort of an ivory tower profession. And we don't even read these publications because this is too far away from our field. We only read what's specific to our research, and usually it's immunizations and how antibodies are generated and all the details of the immune responses. And I went through my whole PhD training, and I believe that vaccines give you immunity, and that if you got vaccines, there is absolutely no way, virtually no way, that you would get a disease. And I'm pretty sure that most of my colleagues in my narrow field believe the same way, and we had conversations about that. And even someone at some point mentioned to me and said that they had a vaccine and they got measles. And I sort of brushed it aside, and the person is confused. It was either she didn't have the vaccine or it wasn't measles, one of the two. But what happened is that a few years ago, I had to apply for American citizenship, and part of the procedure is to submit your vaccination records, right? And this was the first time that I looked at my own vaccination records carefully, and I discovered that I had two measles vaccines in my childhood. Well, I didn't know about it because I was too young to remember. But what I remember really well is that when I was 11, I had measles. And so that was a little bit harder to discount. And I told recently someone else, and they said, oh, you are confused about that. You didn't have measles. Like, how do you know? Like, did you check your, you know, was really the virus there or not? So it just, you know, the doctor's diagnosis, right? But I lived in Ukraine, and there, you know, there was tons of measles around, and doctors knew when they saw measles. But anyway, so the reason I kind of had to look for these papers is to actually to confirm to myself whether I'm confused about my measles or is this a general phenomenon and it's happening, you know, and it's documented in the literature, and indeed it is documented in the literature. But immunologists don't know about it. Okay. So let's look a little bit more specifically into the last paper, the SARS 2011, because this is close to our times and to home. So this is the outbreak that happened in Quebec in 2011 in the spring. And here's a few curious details that I took from this paper. So the this outbreak, it's post-elimination era, so it's an imported outbreak. It was imported by a high school teacher, an adult. He was himself vaccinated against measles in his childhood. So he went on a spring break abroad, and then when he returned, he got sick. He felt sick, but for the first 3 days of his sickness, he was still teaching. And because of that, I guess not realizing that how could that be measles or anything. Measles in the beginning looks like flu, really. I had it, so I know. So probably he didn't realize. So he was teaching, and he infected a lot of high school students.
All right, just to recapitulate, because we're running out of time, she makes two important statements in just this brief part of this clip. She, like most immunologists, believed that once you were vaccinated, that's it. You would never come down with the condition. Now she is finding not only did she come down with it after being vaccinated, but there were multiple scientific papers in immunology that showed fully vaccinated groups coming down with measles and a more severe form of measles, whereas those who had gotten measles as a child, like myself and many people listening right now, you were immune for life. You never got measles again. And also, by the time that measles vaccine had been introduced, it was virtually, the mortality was so insignificant, almost non-measurable. And therefore, if you look at the charts, vaccine mortality was 99% gone before the advent of the vaccine. So here's a question for the pro-vaccine people. How can you take credit for the elimination of measles when, A, it was already gone, and all the public health charts show that, and B, if you're saying that it produces antibodies and therefore is protective, why all these peer-reviewed published studies showing that those who have been fully vaccinated came down with the measles? And also for herd immunity, if you had 99% of the people vaccinated, that means they absolutely had herd immunity, which, by the way, is only 68% have to be vaccinated, which shows that herd immunity is a complete and total fraud. And it's been misrepresented, as you will hear in our next discussion, on herd immunity. So piece by piece, the structure of myths that vaccine safety and efficacy are based upon, we are deconstructing by people who are absolutely the top of their field. They're fully qualified. The difference is on this program, you will not hear pro-industry people acting as advocates, as you will on all the other networks, and even a lot of the non-commercial radio programs I hear out there. They have the Paul Offits and others who come on, which is his right to say anything he wants. I don't question his right. But why would you invite someone on who's there as a pro-vaccine advocate who earns millions of dollars and who has invented vaccines and those vaccines have been challenged on their safety. More on upcoming programs. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.